God.
We're going to need this later. So, in case you haven't noticed, today is Pentecost. It is celebrated as the birthday of Christianity. We don't have a cake, but we got plenty of candles. Pentecost is a celebration of this particular story. But to really get what's going on in the story, we have to go back and start at the beginning, when Jesus called a bunch of everyday folks, mostly what we would call today working class folks. Jesus called them to give up their lives as they knew him and follow him with the dream of changing the world. They knew how to be followers. They trusted that Jesus would be the leader. They trusted that Jesus had a plan, and all they needed to do was follow and do what he told them to do, and the world would change. And so they followed, and they listened to him speak, and they saw the things that he did, and they followed. And they weren't surprised when Jesus said that he was going to go to Jerusalem, because they believed that if you were going to change the world, you eventually would have to go right to the center of power. And in their world, at that time, Jerusalem was the center of their world, the center of power. They didn't really understand what Jesus was talking about when he said that he was going to get arrested and that he was going to die. That, of course, made no sense to them, and so they just filed that away as Jesus being metaphorical. They saw Jesus undoubtedly through the lens that we're all given at birth when we grow up in what we call civilization, that lens that helps us see a particular way in the world, not necessarily the truthful way, but a particular way. And that way says that power is the ability to dominate, the ability to make people do what you want them to do. And so when they thought that Jesus was going to change the world, undoubtedly they believed that Jesus was going to gain that kind of power sufficient enough to change their world. And part of that change would undoubtedly be to push the Roman Empire and all its soldiers and tax collectors out of their country. Going to the heart of power then made sense. Perhaps they believed that Jesus inside Jerusalem, there packed with people to celebrate the High Holy Days, inside Jerusalem would be the perfect way to ignite the spark and start the revolution and turn the Romans out. Except that didn't happen. Jesus went to Jerusalem, didn't start the revolution. Jesus did in Jerusalem what he'd been doing in Galilee. Jesus talked about a different way of seeing the world, a different way of living in the world. Jesus challenged the very foundations of the power of domination, the desire to dominate, the use of violence, the desire for wealth. And as he challenged these things, he was also challenging the power of the powerful people in Jerusalem. And Jesus was on their turf. And so it didn't take long for him to get arrested and then endure what today we in America call enhanced interrogation, but what the rest of the world calls torture. And then he was killed. And his followers had no one to follow. And they were lost. And they were afraid. And they didn't know what to do. They thought that Jesus had a plan, but if he had a plan, it must have failed terribly because Jesus was dead and the world hadn't changed. And now they were being hunted. If they would have been caught as followers of Jesus, they might have been arrested. They might have suffered the same fate as Jesus. And so they hid out in a small room, and they closed the doors, and they closed the shutters, and they stayed in that small room. Now, the story we have today, I think it was written by a storyteller, and storytellers tend to try to make things a little bit more jazzy than perhaps they really were. And if we read the story literally, it sounds as if the followers of Jesus all kind of sat in the room like puppets awaiting someone to pull their strings, just sitting in the box waiting for someone to come along. And the Spirit does come along and pull their strings, according to the story. But I tend to read stories as if what happened back then happens in the same sort of world that we live in now. And so, Jesus, gone, would have left the followers trying to figure things out. I see them sitting in that room struggling to figure out what the heck just happened, struggling to get over the loss of the person that they'd come to see as a leader and a friend, struggling to figure out what they were going to do next. I give them credit. They could have left. They could have gone back to their own lives. They could have gone back to Galilee and left it all behind, but they stayed there and they tried to work it out. And as they talked and as they cried and as they prayed and as they struggled to figure things out, eventually the light came. This insight, this awakening that swept through them. Now, with the enhanced special effects budget of the storyteller, we have wind blowing so hard that it's shaking the building, and we have fire coming down and resting on people. It's a really dramatic scene, but what it's capturing really is that aha moment when a group of people awaken to a startling idea. And the startling idea was that Jesus really did have a plan, and they were part of it. Jesus was, they believed, the Christ, the embodiment of the will of God. And now that Jesus was gone, that role of the Christ was now theirs. The reason they'd been following Jesus around, the reason they'd been listening to him speak, the reason they'd been watching him do the things that he did was so that they could do it. They were the Christ. And that insight awakened them. And even Jesus' death had a role, because inside the world, as run by systems of domination, death is the trump card. Death is the thing that the system of domination can always pull out to trump whatever movement arises. It may not be the actual death. It may be one of those little deaths like getting fired from your job or getting evicted from your apartment. But the system has that power that it uses to silence people. Jesus knew what he was walking into. He told the disciples going to Jerusalem would mean his death, and yet he went anyway, and they got it. They understood that if the threat of death were to detain the truth, then the truth would never be free. They understood that in his death, Jesus had planted the seed of a movement. And if that movement were to rise up, then they would have to be the Christ. And so they threw open the doors, and they threw open the windows, and they went out and they began to proclaim Jesus' world-changing message with a little bit of an addition, because they stuck Jesus into that message as well as the one who shows the way to embody that message. They began to do what Jesus did. They stood with suffering people. They stood against oppressors. They shared their resources with those in need, and they celebrated a life lived in harmony with God's will for the world. They woke up. And what better way to undermine a system that relies on death is that if you kill one, 12 more rise up. And if you kill those 12, 144. What better way to challenge a system that uses death as its tool to make death a means by which people are empowered? And so they became the Christ. And they got arrested and they got killed, and the movement grew. And grew and grew in the face of harsh and brutal opposition by an empire that knew how to do harsh and brutal like no one else. And the movement only stopped when the empire changed its tactics and joined. When the Jesus movement became the Christian religion, and the Christian religion became officially accepted by the Roman Empire. Not only accepted, but supported. And the empire stopped persecuting Christians and built places for them to worship. Stopped persecuting Christians and started paying their leaders. Stopped persecuting Christians and gave them positions of authority inside the empire. To where becoming a Christian then was a way to get ahead. And when you take Christianity, which was always meant to rise from the needs of those on the bottom, and put it in the hands of those in the top, it transforms it into something that it was never meant to be. And Christians became like those leaders of the temple that Jesus spoke out against. Throughout the ages, there have been those that have awakened to the message of Jesus and started movements in opposition to the dominant form of Christianity as a tool of the empire. The monastic movement, some of the Protestant forms, here and there, everywhere, the Spirit breaks out and people catch fire on that idea of a movement to transform the world through a different kind of power and a different way of living. And that's what we celebrate today. That fire is still there. That call is still there. We live in a world where that call is desperately needed. We saw that a little bit in the past couple weeks. The struggle to get enough money to end homelessness is going to be an ongoing struggle. The tax raising $75 million from the wealthiest corporations in our city met with strong opposition. Amazon stopped working on one of its buildings as a threat to the city to say, if you pass this law, we may take our corporation elsewhere. And people who were working on that building were frightened of losing their jobs and came in and protested against the tax. But at its height, the tax would have cost Amazon about $20 million a year. And from what I can read, last year Jeff Bezos himself, founder of Amazon, himself made several times that each and every day last year. For 2% of the wealth that Jeff has, now we could end homelessness in Seattle and King County. Three people in this country now own more wealth than the bottom 50%. Three people, 160 million people. And the world is tilting ever towards the 3 and not the 160. As I read it, last year Amazon paid no federal taxes. All the state and local taxes that they paid amounted to 0.1% of their revenues. And yet that $20 million, that little bit of money, caused them to threaten the city. We're going to need billions to end homelessness in Seattle. It's pretty clear that the only way to end homelessness is to provide affordable housing for people. And that doesn't just happen out of the market. The hidden hand of capitalism, if it worked, would have provided housing for people who have little or no money. But it isn't. And this very wealthy city is seeing increasing numbers of homeless people. The world needs a new idea, and it's going in the wrong direction. We need to figure out a way in which we build an economy that's based on the idea that everybody has enough, and not that some people have so much more than they need that they'll never be able to figure out how to spend it all. The world needs a new idea. And fortunately, we have one. It's burning all the time in us. It's a wind blowing all around us, ready to catch us up. Now, movements don't just pop up out of nothing. I think the Poor People's Campaign is doing an experiment to try to see if they can ignite a movement. And I'm not sure that it's going to work, but I give them credit for trying. Movements come when they come, but they don't come unless people are there, ready, and prepared, unless people have a vision of an alternative. People can get very frustrated with the way things are, but will have no idea where to go unless there's a vision. And we've been given that. A world built on love, on compassion, on sharing. That as the power to build a world on. And that is the power we celebrate today. The world can change in an instant. All the power that people think they have is really nothing at all. Jeff Bezos, for his $100+ billion, is really just a holder of a bunch of zeros in a computer someplace. Real power is the power of sunlight hitting fertile soil. Real power is the power of human creativity. Real power is the power that people have when they say they will commit themselves to a vision. That power is there to transform the world. A wick waiting for a spark. The call to us as people of faith is the same as it was to that group hiding away in that room. To throw open the doors. To do what Jesus did. To share and live a vision of transformation. And become God's good news to the world. Amen.